you were there last night. Indeed, readers of the Daily Memphian.
I was there at FedEx Forum. I was not there at the draft. It was not.
Yes, that's right. Peter, my son, was there at the draft. The readers of the Daily Memphian should have known that this was a distinct possibility. Drew Hill went to the draft combine and talked to Zach Edey, and Zach Edey told him, "I like Memphis,"
right,
and talked about the interest, the mutual interest there. Last night, Zach Kleiman, I gather, said that Zach Edey let the cat out of the bag at that thing. And then earlier this week, and we've been talking about Zach Edey for a long time now, but earlier this week, you wrote a column about why the pick could very well be Zach Edey at 9. And that is what evolved. I'll just ask you, people could read your column over at the Daily Memphian, but what did you think of the pick?
I'm fine with it. I sort of wrote the justification, defense, explanation, or whatever in advance, and given the idea that that might be happening. I'm okay with it. And in fact, if you just said this is the way the draft played out, you're picking at 9, you can't do anything else. Well, you picking? That's probably who I'm picking. I had Ron Holland above him, but Ron Holland went ahead.
Right. He went to Detroit.
And so if I had updated my own quote-unquote draft board, which I did like a month ago, if I'd updated that this week, I think Zach Edey would have been the highest-ranked player on my board who was there when the Grizzlies picked. So I like Zach Edey. I've been higher on Zach Edey than, like, the mocks and stuff pretty much all season. Like, I remember back early in their college season talking about him on the show.
Yeah, then he was in the low 20s.
Yeah,
or whatever.
But I always said that was ridiculous. People were comparing him to Boban Marjanovic, and it's stupid to me. Like, his body control, and it's not the same other than being tall. So I've liked Edey more than the consensus all along. I like the fit with the Grizzlies even more than him generally. But the other thing, and this has been the thing with me, is like my expectations for this draft are not
so
like,
low. Yeah.
You know, the idea that, well, this guy may not be on part of your 5 and, you know, the fourth quarter of game 7, like, okay. Like, who is? Hopefully G.G. Jackson is or Vince Williams Jr. is. My anticipation was not the Grizzlies are going to get like a star at the 9th pick in this draft.
Right.
My hope was that they get someone who helps them win basketball games, and I think Zach Edey's going to do that. I am, the more I look at it, I'm going to write a little bit more probably midday today, soon. I'm not quite finished, sort of a next day notes kind of thing. I am bullish, increasingly bullish on the impact the success Zach Edey's going to have and the impact he's going to have on offense. Defense to me is a question, a real question.
That's the question.
But I think he may be really good both for himself and for the team on the offensive end.
Why?
It's counterintuitive, I think, to people, even though I wrote about it a lot while it was happening and talked about it. Steven Adams helped the Grizzlies' offense a lot more than he helped the Grizzlies' defense, even though he didn't score.
Right.
He couldn't shoot. But the team's offense, if you go back, not last season, because Steven Adams didn't play last season, but the year before four and the year before that, those two seasons where he was with the Grizzlies, the Grizzlies' offense overall was like a 60 to 80 percentile in the NBA as a team offense. When Steven Adams was on the floor, it was above a 90% team offense. And the two big things he did were the screen setting and the offensive rebounding. He freed Ja Morant up, and he just crushed the offensive boards and gave them extra possessions and all of that. I think Zach Edey has a chance to be, like Steven Adams, super elite in those two very specific things, and maybe to be that, like, real fast. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if he's the best in the NBA at setting screens and crashing offensive rebounds. Those two very simple things that Steven Adams was best in the NBA at. But then on top of that, guess what Zach Edey has that Steven Adams doesn't? He's going to finish above the rim.
Right.
He's got touch. He's going to create a shot every now and then against the mismatch. He's going to get fouled. He's going to make free throws.
Right.
I think he's going to bring the passing. We'll see if
he passes. I was going to say, he's not like the big thing that Klingon did better. A, he's better defensively, Klingon, or he's allowed to be better defensively because he was allowed to foul out, play limited minutes. He was more aggressive. But then you could see Donovan Klingon as a passer fitting in a way that we don't even know if Zeedy wasn't asked.
Yeah, that's the third leg of the Steven Adams stolen offense.
Right.
Screening, offensive rebounding, high post passing. But it wasn't like Nikola Jokic. It was just sort of a hub. He would help things flow. So Edey may not do that as well, but he's going to make free throws better. He's going to finish better. He's going to be a lob target more. I don't know whether he'll shoot from the perimeter, but he'll shoot from the perimeter more than Steven Adams did, which was absolute zero, right? And so I think the fit on offense is going to be kind of great, and I think it's going to be really successful. Defense, the foot speed thing is the obvious glaring question, and that's the big thing.
It is funny, like the reaction, and you wrote about in your column, the reaction was incredibly polarizing, although it's interesting. We have a poll up, and right now, love it, hate it, or wait and see. Well, wait and see is, of course, you can both like it and wait and see. Right. That seems to be the obvious. The hate it's are pretty dug in. But there's only 4% hate it. What are we up to now? What are we up to hate
it? We are now up to...
They're loud, but they're not...
mighty 7%.
Yeah. So, but some of the things, like, you got a lot of Hashim Thabeet 2.0, and it's just... Among the very outrageous things about that comparison are what you just talked about.
He can fail, but he won't fail for the reasons Hashim Thabeet.
He is incredibly skilled and offensively, and Thabeet had zero skills offensively.
And Thabeet. Edie is super productive at the college level, and contributed to winning at the college level, and like goes hard and has a motor and has a feel for the game. Thabeet failed because of his total lack of feel for the game and lack of motor.
Right.
If Edie fails, it will be because he's just too slow defensively, and the ability for other teams to attack that will outweigh the benefits that he brings in other areas. That's the calculation.
You think he's slower defensively? Like Jonas? Like what are they going to do with him defensively?
I think this may be overstated because. A, he's going to play, like most of the time, he's going to drop back defensively and like block out the sun, and Jaren Jackson's going to roam around him and swat stuff. And it's not, you know, Taylor Jenkins, former Milwaukee assistant coach, it could be not radically dissimilar from the Brook Lopez, Giannis Antetokounmpo dynamic, which, by the way, they won a title with, in part, with their defense. Brook Lopez is an all-NBA level defensive player, and I'm not saying Zach Edey's going to be that. I think Donovan Clingan is a better defensive comp for Brook Lopez and Zach Edey. But, like, Brook Lopez is not out, like, you know, shutting down guards on the perimeter. And like, you can get by him and all of that. And so I think, you know, they're obviously, when he's on the floor, going to play a drop defense where he sags back into the paint. And they're going to be susceptible to three-point shooting and guards and stuff like that. To the degree that it becomes an issue, like, they'll adjust. He's not going to be playing 42 minutes a night. If he is a part-time player, and by part-time, I don't mean like 15 minutes. I mean like, you know, 25, like Steven Adams was.
Right.
If he's a player who's like the word Zach Kleiman used last night, options, if that is a look that thrives sometimes, and there's sometimes where it's problematic and you switch to a different kind of look, like, that's fine.
Right.
That's the reason they did this. They didn't do this to say, this is the style we will play all the time.
Right.
They did it to say, we have this on our menu. We also have Jaren Jackson, Brandon Clark, dynamic, athletic, disruptive, one spreads, one leaps. We have that look. And then whether it's Asante Aldama or Gigi Jackson or Jake LaRavia or whoever, we also have the look of like more of a face-up guy. We play Dexter Jaren and everyone can shoot threes. They can go all three directions, which is what they wanted. Without Zach Edey or someone like that, that direction was not open to them.
And so in terms of his role next year, you think it'll be
unless he has big problems from the jump, I think he's likely to be the starting center on opening night.
He's going to be all rookie team?
Oh, who knows? I haven't seen any of these guys play against NBA basketball players before. I don't know.
This is talk radio.
He has. This is one of the reasons. This is another reason I like the pick relative to their options. Yeah. Is there is a path to playing time?
Clearly,
how many of these guys look at it and say, "Well, he's going to start."
Even Reed Shepard. What's he going to play? I think he's going to be good, but what minutes is
he's
he going to get?
Off the bench,
I don't know.
And so Edie's opportunity to get meaningful minutes and be productive from the jump is very high relative to the other rookies. So, yeah, I think he's got a great chance to be an all-rookie team guy.
So, Zach Kleiman asked about last night in the reports that the Grizzlies were trying to move up to get Clingan. He said this: "This is exactly what we were hoping would happen tonight. Connor and I have analyzed that as technically true. They were hoping they were getting a starting center tonight, but in fact a fib because they would have partaken Clingan over Edie." Do you have a guess?
Yeah, that's both precise and vague at the same time somehow, was that what it said? Like, it's quite artful. So I attempted to look around on this. I assume more stuff's going to come out from other people. I don't know, as a matter of fact, what played out. I have a theory, and I feel good about my theory. My theory is this. I think the Grizzlies had trade discussions with the Detroit, at a minimum, with the Detroit Pistons and Charlotte Hornets about moving up to the fifth or sixth pick. And if those trade discussions had borne fruit and they had moved up, they would have drafted Donovan Klingon at those picks. I don't think to continue with my theory, I think the Grizzlies did not perceive a wide gap between Donovan Klingon and Zach Edey the way that the general consensus perceived a wide gap.
Right.
If Edey was a backup plan, it was like a
1A, 1B.
Yes. And so there's that aspect of it. And then from the aspect of Detroit and Charlotte, look at who they took. They took guys and people didn't think were going in those spots.
Right.
I think those two front offices were very fixated on those specific players and in both cases were worried about losing them if they moved back. In Charlotte's case, there was a lot of talk about San Antonio being interested in the saloon guy at eight. And look what happened when he was off the board. They traded the pick. So he may have gone at eight. So if they were just committed, we got to get this guy, he may not be there at nine. If Ron Holland, I don't know. If Klingon is off the board, what does Portland do? Do they take Zach Edey or do they take Ron Holland? So I think those two teams really wanted those two players and were reluctant to move back and lose those two players. And thus, my theory is they were trying to extract a very high price to move back a few spots because they didn't want to risk losing their guys. And I think the Grizzlies did not perceive the gap between Klingon and Edey to be worth the price it was going to take to close that gap. And that's what I think happened.
Do you think the difference would have been worth a lottery protected first?
Yeah, maybe, but my guess is that the price
was
higher
more than that. Yes. Right, they were trying to extract more than that. I don't know,
but that is my guess.
Yes, if they were trying to extract some giant, they don't. So it is then.
I think they may. And again, I don't know. I'm guessing.
They've been
asking for two
twos, and the Grizzlies weren't going to do that. And
two ones.
That's what I mean.
Two future ones.
Right. And they're not going to do that. And so it goes to the brink.
I don't know if that's what they were asking, but my guess is it wasn't a lottery protected 2025 first, and that was it to move up. My guess is they were wanting more than that.
And I heard some irritation. Well, okay, from my son at Charlotte that they felt they couldn't move back and take Saloon. Just move back and take him. But I'm with you.
I think you never know.
If you have a guy you really like, you just never know. Did anyone think Connect was going to go 17? Saloon
again,
was going to go
even from the outside, there's real reason to think that the fact that A, he was rumored to the Spurs, and B, the
they
Spurs
immediately
moved
traded
off the
out.
Pick when he wasn't there suggests he may have gone to the Spurs.
Yeah. I think that's right. So I don't. Now, the Ron Holland one, just apparent, but I don't hate that one either because I think he could be the best player in the draft. I mean, he could very well, but he's, in terms of fit, like.
It's a bad fit with
it's
the
a
roster,
horrible fit.
But guess what? The
they
guy making
care.
That pick didn't put together that roster.
Right.
This is his first pick.
It's talent acquisition.
Yeah.
It's talent
he's
acquisition.
He's taking his guy.
Right.
He's not going to get all. He's not going to be dissuaded from taking his guy because all these other guys, somebody else.
Right. I think that's right. Okay, so we agree that they preferred Dalton Klingon. We believe they preferred they preferred Donovan Klingon.
I'll just be more precise. I believe that if they had done a deal with Detroit or Charlotte, they would have taken
Donovan Klingon.
Yeah,
but are perfectly happy with the way that it worked out. That was that part of it was not a fib. So what does this mean, Chris, for where they go from here, both today, but also in terms of filling out the roster? They have their center.
I think as much as Zach Kleiman likes to trade and move around, I think they're just going to stand pat at 39 and take a player, and they're going to put that player on their roster on a rookie minimum contract and say, we got a guy to be our 13th, 14th, 15th man who's cheap and we think has a chance to help us. I think that's what's going to happen. And if I don't know who that's going to be, but if you look at like the kind of players the team might need, you identify three things. One, they just need shooting, period. Anywhere you can get it, shooting. I think they could still use, if they have room for it, a fifth big. They got four, but they could use a fifth. And, you know, are they going to carry Derrick Rose on the roster? Sounds that way. Scottie Pippen Jr. on the two-way, they could use more ball handling too. So I think, you know, any of those three boxes, there are multiple players in the mix. And some players could check more than one of those boxes. You know, you take a big who can shoot. You take a ball handler who can shoot. You know, I think something like that could be attractive. I think they just take a guy at 39 and put him on the roster on a rookie minimum. And then the question is going to be the Kennard thing, which will come to a head this weekend one way or another. The fact that they were able to do their primary acquisition, their likely starting center in the draft for that $6 million salary slot,
right.
I think.
So where does that put them now if they keep Kennard?
If they keep Kennard at $14.8 million mm-hmm. and they roster their pick at 39 on a rookie minimum.
And stash their other pick. Their other pick
would be a two-way or a stash. That doesn't matter.
Right, doesn't matter.
They will, if they do those two things, draft and keep the guy at 39, keep Kennard on $14.8 million team option, they will be at their full 15-man roster, and they will be just past the first apron of the luxury tax. And so I think either they're going to do a new deal with Kennard and still be over the tax but get down, or I think there's a good chance they let Kennard walk, and then you have one open roster spot, you have your mid-level exception, you're $7.5 million under the tax, but you have like a 10-man rotation in place, you go out and spend $7 million on a veteran who can help you, and like, A, you're under the tax.
And that
you're,
would,
you're under tax in a way that you don't feel like you've compromised yourself. Because you got your starting center doing this. You didn't go out and sign Andre Drummond.
You needed more shooting and you got rid of your best shooter.
Yes, this is true. But you can only play five players at a time and only play 9 or 10 in a rotation. And like, yeah, even let's say you keep Kennard. I'm not trying to advocate that you're
Kennard. No,
just, let's say you keep Kennard.
Yeah.
Perimeter pecking order. Ja Morant, Desmond Bain, Marcus Smart, mm-hmm. Vince Williams Jr., those four are just flat out better 100%. Than Luke Kennard.
Yes.
What if G.G. Jackson? Right. He could be your sixth best perimeter player, and you're going to pay your sixth best perimeter player $15 million? Yeah. I would be fine if they kept Kennard, but it's not going to surprise me if they say, especially if they say, you know, if there's someone they like in free agency, they think they can get a bargain deal on for more than 1 year, and like now you have like a good contract
what
on the books
sort
instead of a
player,
bad
if they did that, and now you've taken Kennard off, so you're shooting up, what kind of player would they be looking for there?
It's a good question, and that is, I don't know that good contract is out there in free agency, but I think, you know, you're probably looking at those same needs I just identified with the second round pick, like those are the same bundle of needs, so whatever you're not getting there.
How about the idea that they might take a point guard in the top of the second round? Like one of those,
this is what I was just talking about, Tyler
Mark
Kolick.
That guy, exactly.
He's there, he's a guard, and he's a shooter.
Cam Spencer, right, yeah. But Tyler Kolick is perfect.
Cam Spencer's
perfect.
Not
a point guard. He's more
he's
of
a wing.
A
KJ Simpson, this guy from Colorado, right. He's small, but he was very good in college, and he's 40% three-point shooter. This is a guy at Houston, Jamal Shedd. I'm more skeptical about that because he's not a shooter,
right.
And he's small.
No, he's scrappy.
Right, whereas
player.
Simpson is small, but he can shoot. You know, I could see that. Tyler Kolick. And, you know, there's just all kinds of guys. We'll see who's there. You know, Johnny Furphy, the guy from Kansas, who I know they worked out. You know, Filipowski. Hollinger suggested last night there may be medical red flags.
I was going to say, the most shocking.
He had hip surgery in college. And people,
I see.
Maybe that's an issue there.
The two most surprising drops out of the first round were Furphy and Filipowski. And for me, it was Filipowski.
Right.
Just because I didn't know about the
He was
the
a highly
stuff.
Productive player at a major college, and he was a high-level prospect coming out of high school.
He shoots. He'll fit on a team.
Yeah.
Like, he's just obvious NBA player.
I think there has to be something there that's giving teams pause. And I don't know that it's medicals, but again, he had hip surgery in college, so it could be.
All right. In terms of the rest of the draft,
yep.
What'd you like?
I've been so focused on the Grizzlies, I don't know if I fully internalized it.
Well, let me give you some then.
Yeah.
I've said this all along. I think what's interesting about the Spurs is, so they did what everyone thought they'd do. They get Castle, and that's terrifying. Everyone's now calling him a bigger Drew Holiday. And, of course, that remains to be seen. But we don't need a bigger Drew Holiday to be there playing with Wembanyama.
Right.
But then the other thing is that when they traded out of 8 for a 2031 unprotected and a 2030 top one protected swips picks, like they're very clearly, they're not trying to win. Like they will someday weaponize those picks to go get veterans to put around Wembanyama, and they will be terrifying.
I've heard some talk about that, of like, you know, you really think those picks are going to be good because Minnesota will still have Edwards. It's about how far out they are.
Yeah.
And not that you're going to wait to use them to select players.
You're going to wait to deal them.
You're going to wait to trade them.
100%.
And these are trade chips that aren't going to go poof for a long time.
Exactly.
And that is what that's about. And it's also a commentary on this draft. It's like, you know, the potential trade value we can accrue a year from now, you know, 2 years from now, not four or five, but, you know, from that is greater than what we think we can get with this pick. And yeah, do I think they'd like to be in the lottery one more time in that 2025 draft? I do.
Probably.
So yeah, I think all that stuff is relevant.
And then you've got the Timberwolves moving up for Dillingham. And for them, it's just the opposite. Like, they're in it to win it. They have all the defensive players to put around them you could possibly want, and their half-court offense was stinky.
Well, and it's easier given where they are relative to the tax and the restrictions on that. They didn't trade for a contract. They traded for the rights to a player. And, that was an easier trade for them to make.
I see, because they already have the...
And so I don't... Mike Conley's like 37, 38, you know. Their other backup point guards are free agents, may not be back. Monty Morris and Jordan McLaughlin. You know, I think they need more ball handling. They need some path to replacing Mike Conley, and that's right. A pretty high upside swing on that. So, yeah, I can see that. I like Baylor Shireman to the Celtics at 30. You know, the Celtics did not make the mistake they made a few years ago where, like, you know, you're in the tax and you move off the 30th pick. They gave it to the Grizzlies to get Desmond Bane. It's like,
we'll
put him on a cheap contract. Shireman was someone I had talked about earlier as, you know, maybe the Grizzlies. That's the kind of guy the Grizzlies would get at 39, but he did not last that long.
I mean, Topic is a... Is a total.
It's very Thunder. And
people
think the Thunder are brilliant, and Sam Presti is one of the best GMs in the league, but he misses all the time too. He takes lots of swings. And like, what has Usman Jing ever done? Such a Thunder pick. They jumped up in the lottery and they got Usman Jing, Alexei Pokashev. So who knows, right?
There's that one. Washington's finally tanking with all kinds. I mean, really tanking. They're really tanking.
The Portland stuff is interesting. I like. The Denny Avdija stuff, it was funny last night. There were no active NBA players traded during the draft. Wow. Right before the draft, you had the trade with Portland and Washington where Malcolm Brogdon and Denny Avdija got dealt. But once the draft started, I don't know if this has ever happened before. There were zero actual NBA players that got traded. Denny Avdija is funny because it's like, I think he's a really good player and a really good contract, but he didn't play college basketball. He's not a scorer, and he's been playing for the Washington Wizards. It's like the hat trick of obscurity. And so you have to be a real NBA sicko to have any idea who he is. I think he's really good and a really good contract, but I'm not sure what Portland's doing.
Well, that's the thing. Are they trying to be good now? And then
I don't think they got Rob Williams,
and they got, like, what do they got to clear up all that?
Yeah, I think that team is set up to be a messy team that has the ninth pick in the draft next year. You know, I just don't really know what they're trying to do there. I like McCain. We both like McCain the whole time, Jared McCain.
I love that.
The Sixers, like, don't have a roster. They got two players. And, yeah, he overlaps.
He could be rookie of the year.
Yeah, well, he overlaps with Tyus Maxey. He's sort of like Tyus Maxey Jr., but, okay, now you get 48 minutes of that kind of guy. And so I think there's plenty of room for guys who can handle and shoot and on a roster that doesn't have players. I like that for them quite a bit.
How about connect to the Lakers?
I mean, it's hard to say. I like a lot of stuff in this draft. I didn't like the draft.
right?
The Dalton Connect stuff, I don't know. I had talked myself into him. I said, I guess. You know, he's
you
a shooter and you need a wing. And if the other guys are off the board. But, and I don't know with him. The track record of players of that age, like the Wesley Johnson types, the 24-year-old perimeter player, Al Thornton, I think, was a guy like this. The track record of those guys is bad. But at the end of the day, every player is individual. Every player is not their archetype. And so, you know, who knows? He might be really good.
Is age held against the player because it's perceived that they are what they are and they're not going to get better? Or because, like in the NFL, it's often, well, we're only going to have so many years of
them. It's less about the age than, because Zach Edey is a four-year-older guy. Zach Edey was college player of the year after his junior year, right? And so it's less about your age than at what point are you good. And if you don't...
Do you believe in the stats?
If you don't emerge as a clear pro until you're older than all the other guys you're playing against... Like, Tim Duncan played 4 years in college, but who cares? Tim Duncan was awesome as a freshman. You know, it wasn't about that. It wasn't like... It wasn't that he didn't emerge as that guy until later. But when guys, like, don't emerge as that until they're actually older than their competition, that's when it's more of a red flag, I think. But Kinect's got a weird path, so it may not be the case with him, you know?
Edey also has a weird path. You made I urge people to read Chris's column over at the Daily Memphian. The other part of this is, well, first of all, people have a reaction to this because they've seen him. You pointed that out. Like, we can't react to Saloon if they drafted Saloon.
Edey can't hide in any way.
right.
And so the thing with Zach Edey is, if he is good,
Right.
People are going to bleeping love Zach Eadie
so much.
And if he is bad, people are going to hate him and hate Zach Kleiman for drafting him. Like, there's, you
That's
know,
just the way it was yeah. with Biggs. But it's fun. It's a fun, and you'd buffed up
totally
on this. It's a fun pick.
I like, I'm a deacon in the church of Kyle Anderson. I like players who are different. I like quirkiness, and I don't want cookie cutter basketball where every team plays the same style for all 48 minutes and 90% of the players are 3-and-D wings around like the stars. And that's the only thing that happens in basketball. I like big dudes and little dudes and slow dudes and weird dudes. And I like variety. And that's sort of where I ended with my column. It's like the Grizzlies, Zach Kleiman talking about options. They want options because they think options makes them better. Different looks makes them better. I like options because it also makes them more interesting. Different looks makes you more interesting, more variety.
Now, I will say this. You have pointed out over the years that this team has gotten less explosive, less athletic, et cetera.
Yep.
This has not solved that issue.
But it added size, that's for sure.
It does add size.
I just think...
Does it matter that he can't run up and down the court with John Moran? Neither could Steven Adams, neither could Jonas.
Neither could Steven Adams, and Steven Adams was a great outlet passer.
Right, that's true. Zach, you unleashed him.
Yeah, yes. Zach Eadie hasn't shown that, but also, like, who's he throwing outlets to at Purdue, right? He didn't play. The thing about that national title game... He was awesome. They lost, but he was awesome in that national title game. He was playing against five future NBA players. He wasn't playing with any, I don't think, in Purdue. And so I think there's so much about how he was used and the way he had to function within that Purdue team that's going to be so different from in the NBA. That transition could be positive in some ways or negative in others. I don't know, but I think it's hard to say. When people say, well, you're not going to run post-ups all the time, and he couldn't play pick and roll with John Morant at Purdue, you know?
Right.
When Zach Kleiman said last night, like, Ja's good at finding guys, it's going to be easy. Like, I mean, you know, right. Ja is not going to have to, like, whip out his most creative passes to find Zach Eadie on a pick and roll. It's just going to be throw it up there,
right.
You know?
We may be able to watch him in the Olympics, but that means we can't watch him in summer league. What's the story with that?
I don't know. Drew Hill was planning to go to summer league, so I've let him worry about that.
Right.
So I haven't talked to Drew about it today. I know last night he was poking around trying to figure this out, and it was not clear.
Well, training camp for the Canadian national team starts on July 7th, and so
yeah.
It runs through July 7th. That's it. It runs through July 7th.
My thing is, would people like to watch Zach Eadie in summer league with Gigi Jackson? Of course.
Yes.
But, like, who cares at the end of the day? You know?
I'd also like to watch him in Paris.
You know who didn't play summer league? Ja Morant. You know? Because
right.
he had the knee surgery.
I saw Parker pointed out that Zach Kleiman has stayed put and drafted now four times. Since he's been with the Grizzlies. One is Ja.
Well, let me tell you. It was Ja Morant, Vince Williams Jr., Gigi Jackson, and Zach Eadie.
Seems like an okay record, if that's the trend.
Right.
If you're happy what falls to you, take it. I guess that's maybe the message there.
Yep.
You can read Chris over at the Daily Memphian, and I take it you're going to be writing more today.
Yeah, I'm 75% done with something. I'm going to try to finish it up when I walk out of the studio.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it. We got to take a break. Back in a moment. Oh, the University of Memphis has a new AD. We'll talk about that and more. It's Jeff Dawkins, show 92.9 FM ESPN. Two picks in the second round. We, of course, will be talking more about that tomorrow, what they do today in the draft. In the meantime, the other news that dropped yesterday was that Ed Scott is going to be the next athletic director at the University of Memphis. Obviously, Laird Veach off to Missouri. Ed Scott comes by way of Virginia, where he had been most recently. Before that, he was at Morgan State, played baseball at Albany, and... here's the truth. There's no way to know if he's going to be good or bad. Like, when you look at a coaching hire, we can at least go back and look. Even if it's an OC, we go back and look at their offense, right? If it's we can literally see their resume on the field. And it's still hard to know. For an AD, really, really hard to know. Even in retrospect, sort of hard to know. Was Laird Veach good? Was Laird Veach okay? Was Laird Veach... great because at the end Fred Smith came through, or was he lucky because Fred Smith came through? And it's a really hard thing to judge. If you look at Ed Scott, he was not the internal candidate. It was not Jeff Crane, who seemed to be doing a good job as an interim and was well regarded as the deputy here. There were certainly other really good candidates. Mark Allnut had been here once. He's now at Buffalo. Ryan Alpert at Tennessee had been here once, now at Tennessee. They picked Ed Scott. Ed Scott has the advantage that he has actually been an AD at Morgan State, and then has been at a, you know, at a most recently at a place like Virginia. So he has a vast range of experiences. He also is the first black AD in the history of the school. And it's interesting. I just find it. So when the news broke yesterday, and it was Ross Dellinger broke it, the news yesterday that he was the guy, whatever, you tweet it out and you make note of the fact that he's the first black AD at the University of Memphis history. And that just seems to enrage people. Not many people. Maybe it's the same 4% who are enraged by, like, that I'm paying too much attention to the people. It is astonishing to me that the mere fact, like, it's funny, Giannotto wrote a column saying they should hire a black AD. I didn't write that column. I can see the merits of that column. I think in this city, here's the truth. Memphis right now has an AD, will have an AD right now, who is a first-generation college student raised by a single mother who is black. And in this city, a majority black city at a school that reaches out to people and lifts them up, kids who haven't been to college before, a lot of first-generation students, I think that's kind of cool. They also have a president, by the way, who is white, who is also a first-generation college student. He's a basketball player. He went to college on a basketball scholarship. I think at a place like Memphis, kind of cool. I think it's bizarre that right now, if you say a word like inclusion, you're some kind of freaking communist. When did inclusion become a bad thing? When did equity become a bad thing? When did diversity become a bad thing? Have I ever thought they should hire a woman specific, an incompetent woman because she's a woman, or an incompetent white guy because you like white guys, or an incompetent black guy? No, of course not. Don't hire incompetent people for anything. But is it when a moment comes that has never happened before, there has never been a black AD at the University of Memphis, is it notable and worth at least noting in a freaking tweet that this is the first black AD at the University? Yeah, and some of you people are so enraged by that I would ever even point it out. What's the narrative? The narrative is, we you know what? When you have the first black quarterback, you point it out. When you have the first black baseball, like, what, he was supposed to pretend Jackie Robinson didn't matter, that he was like, yeah, he's just a baseball player. No. And when it becomes routine that you have black ADs and black head coach, right now, honestly, if Memphis hired a black basketball coach, no one would say, and Memphis has just hired a black basketball coach. Why? Because it's routine. They've had multiple black basketball coaches. So it's no longer news when you then hire a black basketball coach. But when you have never hired a black AD, it is at least notable. It wasn't even the headline, but it was notable that they hired a black AD. I don't understand why the notion that we can at least, hey, you know, hope he's good, don't know if he's good, wouldn't have hired him just on the color of his skin alone. Of course not. Did anyone think they would have? Just picked some random guy because he fits a race profile? No. He's been an AD in more. I have no idea if he's going to be good or not, but I certainly will not apologize for noting and indeed celebrating the fact that he's the first black AD. Now I hope he's good. And the level that it triggers people when you even mention it is crazy to me. Calm the hell down. Like, it's okay. It's good. It's a good thing. Now let's hope he's good. And to that point, he has a big job. He is coming in. Like, Laird Veach came in and got the stadium going. Now Ed Scott's got to deliver on the stadium. He's got to make sure it's awesome. And because it's expensive to run a stadium, you got to figure out how to run a stadium. It's not something they've done. It's not even Riley on campus. You got to have security guards. You got to have electricity. You got to have power. You got to have all kinds of stuff. Like, you're running a stadium. What Laird Veach used to say was that because we own the stadium now, we can monetize the stadium. So sure, there'll be more economic demands, and it'll be but we're going to have all this. Well, now they got to go get the extra money. I've actually heard ticket sales aren't going great, considering what a great season it's supposed to be. They got to figure out how to sell tickets to football and basketball. They've got to figure out, they got to make sure the penny thing doesn't go off the rails. There's a lot of opportunity here because for the first time ever, you can legitimately argue this is the best program in athletics outside of the Power Five. That first time ever, you can with a straight face make that argument. And so there's a lot of opportunity here. But with that opportunity comes this, okay, now get us in. So it is a big job he's going to have. And because it didn't go to Jeff Crane, who's the guy who was over there, you know, whatever, because you're changing horses in the middle of the stream, right? Like, that's not going to be that easy. You got to get up to speed, got to raise money, got to make all this happen. So it's a big job for him. I hope he's good. Got no idea. Do you have any reaction particularly to it, Connor?
I'm rooting for him, and I agree with you. I would find it odd to not include that he was the first black AD at the University of Memphis. And to your point overall, I looked it up. Only 10.3% of Division I athletic directors are black. So it is still a very notable thing.
In a world where the athletes in your most prominent money-raising programs tend to be black in basketball and football, and the AD's still not.
When you include HBCUs, that number goes up to 19%.
Right. He had been an AD
right.
at an HBCU. So there you go. Of course, that's not his sole qualification. If it was, I would be opposed. But there's been this backlash. Literally, here's this word, inclusion. Why does that enrage you? what is bad about inclusion? The militancy against, like, and it's funny, same people, all kind of same people seem to love Jesus. Don't we think Jesus was about, love, include, like, all these words, like, all of a sudden they're, like, fighting words or something, triggering words. I'm in favor. So, I hope he's good. We do have other news, however. In the University of Memphis front, we've got video game news. What's the video game news?
We do have video game news. So, offensive ratings have come out for NCAA 25, and Memphis is the 19th best offense in the video game. They are ranked at 85.
Memphis football. Best offense.
They were one spot ahead of SMU. They are three spots ahead of Florida State. Tennessee did not make the list, and Georgia was the top team,
That's kind of fun.
Team. It is very fun. Very fun.
That's kind of fun. Did you see they're going to be, the Olympics are coming up this summer, and they're going to have highlight wrap-up stuff, whatever, recap videos, and they're going to use an AI voice of Al Michaels.
I hate that so much. I hate it so much. I do not like AI because it's messing with...
Al Michaels is alive.
He's alive. Like, he
can
alive.
Do the videos. Now, he was supposedly wary, and then he heard it, and he said, no, that sounds just like me. That, to me, is not a selling point. That's creepy as hell.
It's so creepy. Do not like it.
They're putting words in his voice that he does not does not say. Once upon a set, I would never be on Twitter. So maybe next thing you know, my voice will be on AI. But I find that creepy as hell. Okay, finally, we got a presidential debate tonight. And so I got some poll questions for you. Ready?
Okay.
Who would win at arm wrestling? Trump.
100%. Yeah.
Trump would beat Biden in arm wrestling. More likely to help a stranger.
Oh, Biden.
Biden, unquestionably. they asked this to the Americans out there. They did, right? Who would be a better house guest?
Biden.
I think that's right. Who would win at poker?
Trump.
I think this is right. Who would give better relationship advice?
Biden.
Parenting advice?
Biden. Well, but probably Biden.
I think so. Yeah. But I mean, they whatever. Who do you think spends more time getting ready in the morning?
Trump,
very clearly. More likely to remember your birthday. What's interesting is Trump won that one.
I would probably
lean people don't think Biden's going to remember anything. I think that's what's happening there. Who would survive longer on a deserted island?
Oh, God.
Trump could just live off his fat. I mean, just stay alive.
Answer.
They both die.
I'll accept that answer.
They both die, but he could just stay alive longer.
Right.
Right? More likely to return a lost wallet.
Biden.
Pub trivia.
Ooh. Biden.
People say Trump.
I feel like with Biden, long-term memory is still there. You know what I mean? So you would get the trivia.
Better at keeping a secret. Biden 100%.
Yeah, definitely.
Biden 100% keeping a secret. I mean, you got the documents. Like, hey, look at this, you know, whatever else. More trustworthy babysitter.
Biden.
Win a dance-off.
Trump.
Bake-off.
Trump.
Who handles really spicy food better?
Probably Trump.
You're going with you're nailing the people here, by the way. More reliable designated driver.
Oh.
Neither of them drink. Neither of them drink. They would both be totally reliable. I mean, they might have other issues with the driving, but in terms of sobriety, they'd be fine. What's coming up next on 92.9?
On Jason and John, we have Drew Hill at 11:25, the rundown at 12. You will be on at 1:25. And then this afternoon, Gary Darby will be with Sheila and me on the 2 to 4 show.
That's fantastic.
On Gabe Kuhn's show today, we are going to have you and Chip Williams.
All right. We will be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening. For now, our work is done.
Memphis' number one place for sports. This is WMFS-FM and HD1 Bartlett. WMFS Memphis, flagship home of the Memphis Grizzlies. 92.9 FM, ESPN, and Odyssey Sports Station.
At Genesis Memphis Covington Pike, it's time to define luxury in a new way. At every turn, you'll find audacious design, state-of-the-art technology, and exceptional hospitality. We are dedicated to crafting the world's best vehicles, matched by an extraordinary sales-to-service experience for our owners. Prepare to be noticed in the 2023 Genesis G70. This sporty sedan is a force to be seen. We'd love you to explore the 2023 Genesis GV70 with a class-leading 300-horsepower engine or the available 375-horsepower twin-turbo V6 for terrains from concrete jungles to mountain roads. It's a new beginning for a new generation. Genesis Memphis Covington Pike, 1870 Covington Pike, or visit us online at memphisgenesis.com. Estimated horsepower based on premium fuel ratings. Use of regular fuel will result in reduced horsepower. See dealer for complete details. Dealer stock only.
Now is the time to get your fireworks for July 4th festivities. The place to go is Boom City Fireworks for the largest selection and biggest inventory of fireworks in the Mid-South. There are two air-conditioned locations, 3rd Street South and Getwell at State Line Road. Both are open daily from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Power candles are only $3.97. Extreme bag assortment, $100 value, just $59.95. Head to Boom City Fireworks. That's Boom City Fireworks.
Hey everyone, Gabe Kuhn here. I think there's three checklist items when looking for a good dentist practice. One, are they good at their job? That's one thing you absolutely don't have to worry about when you go to Dr. Mady's today at the Smile Center. Two, is it convenient? I would say the Smile Center is about as convenient as it gets. Perfect location in Germantown. And three, are they personable? You may catch Dr. Mady trying to talk Grizzlies with you upon your visit. But regardless, Smile Center checks all the boxes for a phenomenal dentist practice. Get to their location in Germantown or go to SmileCenterMemphis.com.
Meet the new Sonic Groovy Fries. The fries that old sauce so well, they even have their own. Get your dip on with new Groovy Fries and Groovy Sauce. Live free. Eat Sonic.
Enjoy your summer even more by switching to Total by Verizon. Now you can get 50% off any unlimited data phone plan. That's one line for only $25 a month, and you keep the phone you love. Hurry, this is a limited time offer. So find a store or switch at TotalByVerizon.com. Offer ends 7/31/24. Promo subject to cancellation after 12 months. Available exclusively online and in Total by Verizon stores. Requires a compatible unlocked device and SIM. See TotalByVerizon.com for device compatibility and additional details. Taxes and fees may apply.
Humphrey Folk traveled all over the country as a real estate developer, and when he realized his hometown of Memphis didn't have a remarkable steakhouse like other cities did, he took a chance and opened the first prime steakhouse in Memphis, which everyone now knows is Folk's Folly. Worth noting, he also wanted to make sure people could enjoy those Folk's Folly favorites at home, so he created the market now known as Humphrey's Prime Cut Shop. So while you're making plans for the 4th of July, you may just be thinking of hot dogs and fireworks, but it's the perfect time to mix things up. If you really want to do the holiday right, go with prime, hand-cut steaks from Memphis's original steakhouse. It's not a chain, and you really can't get anything like it anywhere else in town. Make your cookout a declaration of independence. Come into Humphrey's and get steaks, freshly ground sirloin, homemade pimento cheese, and so much more that will take your 4th to the next level. So stop by Humphrey's Prime Cut Shop at 551 South Mendenhall, right next to Folk's Folly, or online at HumphreysMemphis.com to get everything you need to grill like a legend. That website again, go check it out, HumphreysMemphis.com.
Get ready, because the Gossett Mitsubishi Motors Summer Sales Event is on, and now is the best time to buy. You want 43 MPG highway? We Gossett in 2024 Mitsubishi Mirage. 18,960 or 279 a month.
And 731-24, promo subject to cancellation after 12 months. Available exclusively online and in Total by Verizon stores. Requires a compatible unlocked device and SIM. See TotalByVerizon.com for device compatibility and additional details. Taxes and fees may apply.
Humphrey Folk traveled all over the country as a real estate developer, and when he realized his hometown of Memphis didn't have a remarkable steakhouse like other cities did, he took a chance and opened the first prime steakhouse in Memphis, which everyone now knows as Folk's Folly. Worth noting, he also wanted to make sure people could enjoy those Folk's Folly favorites at home, so he created the market now known as Humphrey's Prime Cut Shop. So while you're making plans for the 4th of July, you may just be thinking of hot dogs and fireworks, but it's the perfect time to mix things up. If you really want to do the holiday right, go with prime, hand-cut steaks from Memphis's original steakhouse. It's not a chain, and you really can't get anything like it anywhere else in town. Make your cookout a declaration of independence. Come into Humphrey's and get steaks, freshly ground sirloin, homemade pimento cheese, and so much more that will take your 4th to the next level. So stop by Humphrey's Prime Cut Shop at 551 South Mendenhall, right next to Folk's Folly, or online at humphreysmemphis.com to get everything you need to grill like a legend. That website again, go check it out, humphreysmemphis.com.
Get ready, because the Gossett Mitsubishi Motors Summer Sales Event is on, and now is the best time to buy. You want 43 MPG highway? We Gossett in 2024 Mitsubishi Mirage. 18,960 or 279 a month.